Welcome to Trending in Education. Mike Palmer here. I'm joined today by someone who I worked with for many years. I was always trying to get him on the show, so I'm very happy to finally break through and have John Harnischer with me here today. Dr. John Harnischer.
Oh, thank you.
Who is leading the education practice at a company called Datakind. We'll get into that in a little bit. But before we do any of that, John, welcome to Trending in Education.
Thanks. Really happy to be here. It has been a long time listener, you know, first time show upper.
Yeah.
So very excited to be here and talk to you about the exciting stuff that I've been doing at Datakind. I'll tell you a little bit about Datakind itself and then what we're doing in education practice. And
yeah,
happy to go wherever this conversation takes us.
Absolutely. You're someone who I talk to a ton at work, so it'll be fun to see what our 10,000 hours, you know, of prep gives us in terms of rapport as the conversation progresses. No promises. It could be entirely dry and boring. We wanted to hear more about the Datakind work, but we always start by getting to know you, our guest. Can you catch us up on your origin story as someone in the world of learning?
Sure. Yeah. So I've been around learning my entire career. My background is actually as an organizational psychologist. So I did a PhD in organizational psychology and always was interested in the idea of assessment. So very strong for me is if you're not measuring what's happening, you don't know what's happening. So, and I'm still a strong believer in how are we going to assess what it is that's going on so that we can figure out how to intervene, how to make changes, how to move things forward. So I started my career working directly in the space of statistics and analytics for an analytics company, did consulting there for about 10 years, and then started to move more directly into the realm of education and education assessment. Spent about 5 years at a hiring assessment company, then spent a fascinating number of years doing police and fire selection and assessment and promotion. So that's actually a fascinating world that we can
talk
about.
That's a separate episode, but that'll be a good
one. You know, police and fire assessment and promotion. Really exciting stuff. Then went to Kaplan. For me, that was returning to Kaplan as I had been at Kaplan running Kaplan Centers.
Right. We both taught in the Queens College Kaplan Center back in the day, and now come full circle. My wife now works at Queens College.
Crazy. I spent a lot of years in the basement of the Queens College Student Center teaching classes.
Right by the subway. Absolutely. And not the subway.
I ate a lot of Subway sandwiches.
Subway sandwiches. Yes, the subway in the basement, and it wasn't mass transit. Absolutely.
No, not that kind of subway. Yeah, so did that and then returned to Kaplan in 2013 to run their data science and learning practices. And that's where I worked with you quite a bit.
Absolutely.
Left there to do a little stint at a startup and then went to Datakind, first as the head of research, working across the entire portfolio. We do work in many areas, humanitarian response. We do a lot of work in the climate space. We do work in frontline health. We're doing quite a bit of work in the realm of basic needs. And so that's our kind of large portfolio. And then we were able to create a practice just in the space of education. And I was brought in to work on that. So that's what I've been doing for the last several months and very excited about that work.
Yeah, that's great. And then Datakind, you kind of were touching on it, but can you get into a little more of its mission and, you know, what it's all about?
Yeah, Datakind, we basically are in the realm of data philanthropy. So what we do is we bring data science, AI, and machine learning capabilities to social impact organizations. So the for-profit world tends to have many more resources in the space of data science, hiring data scientists, having the necessary tools and procedures and all the data infrastructure that you need to do that kind of work. Mm-hmm. And a lot of non-for-profits and mission-driven organizations don't. Right. So Datakind, we're fully philanthropically funded, and we bring those capabilities to social impact organizations, including universities. And so the one that we're talking about today is a university intervention, but any mission-driven organization is one that we want to support and drive that mission forward by allowing these sorts of institutions and these sorts of organizations to have the same level of data science as we have. So we have a large group of volunteer data scientists who work on our projects, and then we do have internal staff who allow us to bring cutting-edge data science and, you know, especially in the last 8-10 months, AI itself to social impact organizations who are, you know, sometimes lagging behind in that space. And certainly, as much as there is fear of the unknown across the board, when you are working with data and you're working with organizations and you're working with populations who maybe didn't have any hand in the data that was collected,
right,
there's even more suspicion about using such techniques. So yeah, we are trying to bridge that gap a bit.
Yeah, and we'll include links to DataKind in the show notes for the episode. We're also going to include a link to a New York Times article about John Jay College here in New York, where you've been doing a lot of work. And this is, you know, one of the case studies and a really great example of how what you just talked about around DataKind is making an impact in the education space. Can you catch us up a little bit on the John Jay story?
Sure, absolutely. So in around 2016, we were presented with a question from John Jay and from one of the leaders at John Jay, which essentially revolved around, why are people stopping out and dropping out of John Jay College? And is there a difference between stop out and drop out?
Can you clarify the difference between drop out and stop out?
Yeah, so that was a question that was asked. So absolutely, you need to define what are those two things. So the idea here was that lots of people at John Jay College, which is John Jay College of Criminal Justice, a wonderful institution, part of the City University of New York, one of their four-year institutions.
Right over by Columbus Circle, for those in New York, you know, Hell's Kitchen, Stone's Throw Away. It's a nice part of the city, Central Park, not far, you know.
Right, great spot. Yeah. My father's alma mater, so dad spent some years at John Jay. So we were asked that question, and that sort of led us to think about, well, what, you know, what's the question behind the question? We were told, and what we were able to look into a little bit more, is that lots of students were getting to 90 credits, right? So they're getting 120 credits to graduate in general. Students are getting 75% of the way there, and then they're stopping, and they're not graduating. So the first question is stop out. Are they just stopping for a semester?
Are they
stopping for a couple of semesters?
I see.
Or is this a done? They're dropping out. They're done. So the hope and the thought, especially with schools where you may not have fully traditional first time in college, straight through folks, that maybe there's just going to be a break and they're going to come back. So the first question was, is there any data that can help us to understand why that might be the case? Why might it be that students are getting to that number of credits and not graduating? So we did have historic data on students who had gone through the process thus far, looking at getting the degree as our outcome variable here. So this is not a semester by semester. This is really trying to look at degree achievement as the outcome variable. And we were able to build a model in that space and give information to the advisors about who might be at risk. Mm-hmm. So the notion there was, we really want to keep humans in the loop. The best way to intervene and keep someone studying is to give their advisor a chance to sort of say, here are the 750 people that you're assigned to as an advisor. These top 100 look like they're most at risk to graduate. Concentrate on those.
Yeah.
And in addition to just giving you a risk score, or, you know, a need for extra advisement score, or need for extra services score, we also provided, what are the factors that are indicating why this person has that score? So for you, it might be around financial aid need. For another person, it might be around academic need, so that the advisor's already not just equipped with John Harnischer is someone I need to reach out to, but also why is that, so that the interventions can be guided in one direction or another. So my first, you know, the first thought in that space is to really make this about data-assisted advising, giving something to the advisors that would provide them with information they can use to help students better, but also to help them do their job better and feel more like the conversations they're having are immediately about the student, as opposed, if it's a half hour conversation, as opposed to 20 minutes of looking through student information, GPA, gathering data,
asking questions that you could already know the answers to.
Right. Just getting right to it. So anyway, I'll keep going in a moment, but I don't know if you have any clarifying questions or anything for me as I'm going along.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. It reminds me of the idea of a couple of things. One is the idea of augmented intelligence and the idea that humans are assisted with AI is really the space to be looking at. And then similarly, the human in the loop piece where, you know, a lot of the technology-driven startups and edtech folks who I talk to frequently may forget that if you're not thinking about the humans and almost designing human out, you may design it in a way that doesn't make sense. And then in this case, you're designing it in a way that is both facing the advisor, but then also allowing the advisor to lean into more of the human, social, emotional, motivational, coach-like dynamics that I would see as a pretty big trend that we're just at the start of. But I'd love to hear more of your perspective on that. And, you know, I think you may have mentioned AI. I always try to keep a stopwatch and to figure out how long it takes before we talk about artificial intelligence. You're entirely entitled to do it because that's the space you're operating in. That's why you're here. But I'd love to hear maybe some higher level thinking around all of this, maybe extrapolating from what you're seeing at John Jay.
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of things in that space. So this is really a machine learning algorithm that we're using. So if we want to be really careful about machine learning versus AI versus just straight algorithm. So I would call this a relatively transparent machine learning algorithm. But, you know, we use the term AI and, you know, we'll be happy to call this an AI intervention. It is learning. That's absolutely true. I do think that some of the most interesting conversations I've had have been hearing from the advisors whose jobs have changed based upon having this tool in place and based upon having the capability to sort of feel like, I'm more empowered by this data. I'm happy to have this data. I want to move forward with this.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that at John Jay, which is, you know, John Jay College for Criminal Justice, early on, the weaponization of algorithms, especially in the space of, you know, incarceration and a lot of times where that work has not gone into a positive direction that's actually been additive to people. There was a lot of skepticism that our internal champions needed to deal with in terms of talking about how might you make this fair? How do you make sure that this is actually adding? And so in addition to making sure we're keeping the humans in the loop, it was a really important factor for us that we make sure that we are keeping not only the humans in the loop, but that we're also making it so that the folks are getting additional services, right? So that you're saying, everybody who wants to be able to reach out is still able to reach out, but we're making a proactive attempt to work with these folks. We're only adding in those components that actually can move in a positive direction. And another component, another perspective that we brought to bear, if you will, in coming from DataKind was that we only want to work with variables that you can do something about. Right. So to just get a whole bunch of solid demographic variables that say this is the person who's at risk, it's really not very helpful. Like you can't do anything about it. But if you know that a bunch of the variables are in the academic space, a bunch of the variables are about being unaware of services that are available, a bunch of the variables are not being aware of financial aid, not being aware of grants that are available. Like if those sorts of things or a person's GPA is going down, one of the things that's most fascinating for me and that I really heard from one of our advising leads at John Jay was this idea that the advisors, when they're looking at the data, they almost have a feel
of
what is going on, but you can't quite quantify it because it's intersectional of several variables. It's their GPA is going down semester to semester just a little bit, but they're not in danger in terms of the GPA. They're enrolling later on in each semester for the next one. They're spending a little bit less time in their classes, right? All of those things are happening. None of them individually are an indicator, but together, folks with that pattern. So just having the power of, oh, I would not necessarily have known that this person popped up, but because of this combination, I now know who I should target. And then targeting those folks worked really well. So that model started to work well enough that they were really seeing increases in graduation rate over, you know, over years. So we built a second model for them about transfer students coming in so that when students were transferring into John Jay, we could take all of the data about what happened with them at the community college they came from or wherever they were originally and build a model to intervene right away to say, folks who've had this pattern need intervention early or would benefit from knowing about this program. And this really important component here for us as well is that these algorithms are all forward-looking and looking for help because there have been spots with an algorithm like this where John Jay could say, okay, well, if Mike's at risk,
cut bait.
Here's an easy thing. Don't ever take him, right? So this is only after admission to think about how to provide services moving forward. I mean, I'm proud to be part of that because I think that is exactly the way that that these kind of interventions work best and work well and get folks in these schools to complete their degrees.
Yeah, that's great. It reminds me of the communication adage I'm a fan of, which is what, so what, now what? You know, what are we talking about? There's this crisis around completion, around some college, no degree, hitting a bunch of different populations out there. So what? Why does it matter? Well, because these are people who need help and they actually could be productive members of our society and we're losing them. And then what's nice about what you have here is there's the now what? There's a call to action. There's some actual tactics for humans to solve some real problems. And it sounds like the success at John Jay is now opening you up to explore other places where you could kind of extend on what's happening here. Talk us through how that's going and kind of what you see on the horizon there.
Yeah. So one of the most exciting things here is that the projects work so well that John Jay was able to report a 30% increase in the senior graduation rate. So that was that first model, that 90 plus credit model. And that resulted in, you know, an article in the New York Times. And this was a grant that was supported by Google.org. Mm-hmm. Google.org then also said, well, this is working well enough. How do you find other institutions that could benefit from this as well? So we are actually right now on the lookout for institutions that would benefit from a tool like this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're interested in schools that maybe have had real struggles with completion rates for degrees, schools that might be serving special populations that might need extra services, schools that may not have large institutional research budgets.
Right.
And lots of folks working on this, teams of data scientists. So anyone out there who, you know, knows of such a school could reach out to me at Datakind through our Datakind website. And we can look at, does it make sense for us to do an exploratory data analysis on your data and see, is there something here that could really work and where a school could benefit from these services, which are provided at no cost to the school from this grant from Google.org. So I'm very excited about this to get out there and to make changes. And for me personally, one of the first gatherings I was invited to while working at Datakind was at John Jay. And in that gathering, it was folks who were in the CUSP program, which is the senior graduating program. And at one point, they had several of the students who were in the program stand up, you know, and it was at that point that you start to realize, and, you know, some of our volunteers have said this, when you're working with data, there are times where you're working with lots and lots of spreadsheets of data. And then there are the times when you really realize each line of data is a person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that's where you start to realize it's not just, oh, that graduation rate changed. These are people whose lives have changed because of something that was put into place by Datakind. So that was, you know, it's a really important and pivotal moment.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited to be able to spread that to other institutions.
Yeah. That's awesome. You know, I do want to get a little more into even the whole concept of data philanthropy, which I hadn't really heard of before. That makes a ton of sense. I'm really curious about that. What you're just talking about around the human element does remind me of Beth Rudden, who I've had on the show a couple of times. She talks about data as an artifact of human experience, which I think is a nice way to frame it because it's easy to kind of flip things and be more data first, technology first. You also mentioned, you know, keeping the human in the loop. It also speaks to maybe a crisis around trust and data where, you know, coming at it from a philanthropic angle and trying to make a social impact, I imagine can make you more likely to build that trust. But I'd love to get a little more of your perspective, both on the philanthropic angle and then really how to build trust with some of these populations and some of these humans who may be a little leery of leaning into the new AI revolution.
Trust is the key word there. In terms of, you know, what Datakind does across the world, we work with lots of different populations. And so we have worked with populations, for example, in sub-Saharan Africa, where the models that are coming in are really coming in from outside. And so there's an immediate distrust of this wasn't built on me. This wasn't built even the data that's included here doesn't work. Local languages, you know, don't work as well as, you know, the English and Spanish and the big languages. So there is already a trust component there. So one of the things that's happened with Datakind, and a lot of organizations have been doing this as well, is kind of this acceleration of trust and acceleration of activity by organizations that are trying to put their foot in the water.
Mm.
by actually putting up guardrails and boundaries, right? So it's sort of, you know, boundaries and guardrails promoting activity to sort of say, okay, here are the things that are safe. You could write, you know, you can write job descriptions with AI. You can get your first draft of an idea for a conference,
right?
But you don't want to have it, you know, interpreting things for you. You don't want to have it, you know, a chatbot doing therapy, right? I mean, there are things that we really know are far afield. So I think there's almost this safety in feeling here are the boundaries with which you could work. And I think for social impact organizations, that has been even more important early on to kind of engender trust. And it is about, it's about transparency, and it's about coming from this with a domain-informed presence. Like, we come in to build things with and not build things for. It's one of the advantages of coming in as Datakind. We're really trying not to come in with a perspective. We're trying to come in with a set of tools and realize that that perspective resides with the organization that we're bringing along the journey with us, that we're going along with them together.
Yeah.
So I think that is a part that engenders trust as well. But there is also, you know, how do you build trust? You got to do something trustworthy first, right? You've got to actually show that you are really committed to working in a transparent way, that you're making sure to keep humans in the loop, that you're dealing with bias in your systems and, you know, not pretending it doesn't exist, figuring out where it is and what you can do and how you can reduce it, and not having your eyes closed to those kinds of things, because those are, they exist. And so you got to kind of recognize that and then try to see how we can minimize things and follow the mission. You know, if it's a social impact organization, what's the mission of that organization, and how can Datakind come along and help? And is there a data scienceable problem? You know, part of what we also, I think some of the trust is around, we don't see a data scienceable problem here, right? There maybe there's a data problem, right? Maybe there's a data collection problem, but like a data scientist, you know, there's no AI to be built. There's no machine learning would help at this point. You may be at a different phase.
As you were talking, it did make me think about how Datakind as a brand who's impacted other parts of the universe, not just education, can also point to those examples when you're trying to build a practice specifically within education, where I think perhaps even more so than some other spaces, there's a lot more, I'd say, healthy skepticism there from practitioners around like what's actually happening here. And then similarly to your point, the actual data sources have been so biased to begin with that a lot of folks are saying, I don't trust it. I just want to keep it out of my life. But then the related point, I think, is that if we're actually going to change how AI rolls out globally, how technology transforms the world around us, we both need to get buy-in and trust from these populations that haven't been served. And then we also need to use their data to kind of update the models, get stuff actually to be truly representative. The thing that it also brought to mind is the hype cycle around artificial intelligence, where you go through the peak of inflated expectations, the trough of disillusionment, and then people forget there's a plateau of productivity on the other end. And I think a lot of predictive analytics, machine learning, a lot of the stuff I know you've been working on, you know, I've known you 10 plus years now. Ever since I've known you, you've always been working on that stuff. There is this notion that the hype cycle maybe is overblown for good reason, but these technologies ultimately mature. And then it's more about how do you apply them? How do you actually bring them into practice? Practice? You talking to me about practice? That's an Allen Iverson reference for those of you scoring at home. But any thoughts on that? Because I think building an education practice within Datakind writ large, you must have some nice tailwinds because there's good brand recognition and all that. And then there's some unique nuances to education specifically. And then predictive analytics and the work that you're doing seems like it makes a lot of sense.
The key point of all of that is practice, because the model that we've deployed, that the one that we're talking about today with John Jay, is not super complex, right? It is not a generative AI LLM. It's a relatively, you know, standard kind of model, but it's about how do you apply it and about taking it to the spot of making change in a system, right? Making a change in the data comes in, the advisor is actually consuming that. They're then having a conversation. They're tracking how that conversation goes, that we are hoping is making the student feel more connected to the school, able to get over obstacles they couldn't get over before, you know, those sorts of things. So actually having it embedded in a change practice, I think is what's really important. And so for anyone getting into any space of AI or you know, machine learning, thinking about their use case really clearly about what is it going to do to change a practice that I have and to change a work that's going on in my organization. And I think, you know, the other thing that's been really helpful is this is an intervention that actually is about the core of what an education organization does.
Yeah.
Right. So this is one that takes a little bit more effort. It takes a little bit more thought. It takes really being direct about what is going to happen next. And that, I think, is a little bit more of a larger scale kind of project to engage in. But it's those are the ones where you actually see change and impact. Mm-hmm. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to get to change. It's hard to get to impact. And you're absolutely right. Education, the systems are complicated. They're interconnected. The university systems have, you know, large scale student information systems with learning management systems connected to them. Yeah. And so there's so much that's going on already. It's very easy for anything happening at a university to just be like, oh, here's another thing. And they just have so much fatigue about the latest thing that's coming along.
Right.
So I think figuring out where that impact actually is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's almost the technology can be simpler. We don't need to be on the hype cycle of let's get the most complicated.
Right.
You know, we have a really, really fascinating, terrific large language model, the most complicated thing in the world. And what it's doing is, like, you know, sentence correcting for us, right? Okay.
Right.
That we've seemed to have had for a while, right? We need to think about what are the core functions of this organization, and does it make sense to have an AI assist in that space?
Right. There is an element of, you know, the new hotness. Everybody wants to sprinkle. I've heard it called AI washing, where you basically say, there's AI inside just so that you have something to talk about to kind of get people excited about it. And then to your point, the language is very fluid and it's all changing over time. The other thing that I thought was interesting coming at this from Datakind's perspective is I'm always curious about adjacencies. You know, I talk to people in education all the time. And one of my questions that I always ask them, and I'd love to ask you this question, is outside of education, where do you look for inspiration? And then for you, I imagine, you know, there's the Datakind element, but then also personally, whatever you're tuned into, you know, if you're just looking within the field, frequently you don't have a breakthrough innovation. Datakind even sounds like it's structured in such a way that if you discover something in a different space, it potentially is a new place to experiment within education.
The easier circle for me is those other things that are going on in these other spaces at Datakind, because they're so exciting and there's so much of them. And we've got brilliant data scientists working on all of these components.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm really interested, and so is Datakind, in trying to solve the thorniest problems that exist.
Yeah.
You know, the really, really big problems. Mm-hmm. So looking at humanitarian response, for example, obviously a humongous problem and humongously important right now. But one of our lead data scientists did quite a bit of work on getting different sources of data and meta tagging that data really well and really easily and automatically, so that you could learn so much. And through that process, shrink the amount of time that a humanitarian response team would have before they'd be able to know what to do.
Yeah.
Right. So thinking about it, it's an application within a very different space outside of education. But this idea of, oh, there's so much stuff that I'm sure people are spending tons of time putting tags on. That is a thing we can trust these machines to do, right? And we can also oversee that. And so trying to find those kind of things, I think, is really exciting for me. And those are the most direct things that I think are most applicable in education.
Mm-hmm.
But also just, you know, staying aware of what's happening. I was able to participate in a program that Datakind put together in January on generative AI called Learning Circles, where we were just convening lots of people who are at the beginning of starting with generative AI. And it was an international group, and there was a group in education. I learned a lot with a group in education, but for the more broad group, it's just hearing about what are we trying to do? What are the use cases that are out there? And what have others in my area done?
Mm.
It just kind of broadens the way that you're thinking about this space and, you know, reading and engaging in new things all the time. There's so much out there. There have been a few times where I really have just felt fatigue myself.
Yeah.
Like I'm full. This, like, you know, there are, yes, the machines are getting better, yeah, able to do things, but these human brains are not changing.
Yeah.
So there have been a few times where I've thought, wow, I don't know where to go next. And so it's also living with that, like, you're not alone in that either, that,
yeah,
you know, there's so much out there and that it's okay to say, I'm not going to be able to follow that trend.
Right.
That there's probably a lot of interesting stuff that are going to happen. I'm going to read a summary report in that,
yes,
because I don't think I could,
yeah,
really think about that myself deeply.
Yeah. I've been looking back to that last time I feel like there were awakenings like this was in like the 60s and the 70s. And there's books and cultural stuff around that. The one that I keep coming back to is Future Shock, which they were talking about back in the 70s. And like, if there was Future Shock then, I can't even describe the level that we're at right now, where it's kind of like, hey, amazing, I'm living in sci-fi. And then you're like, oh, crap, I'm living in sci-fi. Like, and then not to mention just trying to find the signal in the noise, finding the good curators, the people you can kind of look to kind of help shepherd you through it all. We're getting close to time, John. One thing you mentioned that I wanted to make note of, which I think is a really good one, is that here, you know, you started by talking about assessment a little bit. There's very clear metrics around what success looks like in the case of John Jay. And I think that's important. You were touching on it, but I kind of wanted to circle back because I feel like that's one takeaway I certainly am getting from this conversation. As we're concluding, maybe you could pick up with that one and then any other concluding thoughts, any other takeaways, lessons learned. But yeah, it's been a wonderful conversation and we'll include more links to all the stuff John's got going on. May even get him back for a subsequent show. We'll see.
Maybe.
But we'll see. Yeah, take it away.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. I do think if you can measure the impact, if you can think about what is the impact that I'm trying to get at and make sure that that is an actual impact that you want to follow, right? None of this putting metrics down to follow the metrics and know deep down that it's not actually the impact that you're looking for.
Yeah.
So for me, there's this change in graduation rates, which is pretty distal from where we are, right? But there's definitely a huge amount of signal saying the things that we have done are making change in a positive direction, right? That the advisors are feeling different about their job. The students are interacting more. They're feeling more connected to the university. They are staying semester to semester and then ultimately perceiving. So if you can have that clarity around the impact, that would be, I think, the most exciting thing to be able to do. And as I said earlier, we're happy to talk to institutions that might be interested in journeying along with us.
Amazing stuff with Dr. John Harnischer from DataKind. Always a pleasure to get folks who I've had plenty of time with on the show. It's great to have you on, John. Hopefully we'll have you back again soon.
I hope so.
And our listeners, hopefully you enjoyed what you heard. If you did, please subscribe, write reviews, tell your friends, do all the good things. We'll be back again soon. This is Trending in Education.